So welcome to the second half of today's session. Charles talked this morning about the interaction between the ISB and the foundation and other bodies. On the agenda is the topic about the future governance of the International Public Sector Accounting Standards Board, and actually the involvement of the IFRS Foundation in that governance. The basis for the session is the report of the review group that looked into the International Public Sector Accounting Standards Board governance. And we are happy to have here with us Jon Plondal from the OECD. And Jon will start with giving us some insight into the work of the review group and the report. And then David will take over with regard to the foundation's perspective. John?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. On behalf of the entire governance review group, I would like to voice our great thankfulness for the opportunity to appear before you and to present the paper and to answer any questions that you may have and participate in the discussion. I am one of the co-chairs of the governance review group together with Richard Hughes from the International Monetary Fund and Chuck McDonough from the World Bank, soon to be replaced by Brian Quinn. And at the outset, I would also like to congratulate the IFRS staff for the excellent background paper that was presented for this session. I think it drew out very well some of the key issues that we had discussed in many ways during our deliberations. What I will try to say in about 10 minutes or so is first just a few words about IPSASB, then a few words about the governance review group, its origins, then the governance challenges that we see as a group hampering IPSASB's activities, then outline the three options that are presented in the consultation paper for improving the governance of IPSASB, and then finish with a few remarks. But at the very beginning, I would like to commend IPSASB and its predecessor, the Public Sector Committee. I started being associated with this on behalf of the OECD in 1996, which was the same year that the Standards Project came to being. And at that time, it was a very obscure body that was fighting for its relevance. And then in a remarkably short period of time, it has attained great prominence. And to even have the European Union last year with a paper on whether to adopt IPSASB's as a basis for official EU reporting, I don't think anybody could have foreseen that in 1996 when we embarked on this. And I would like to just pay tribute to the dedication of the IPSASB's, the chairs, the members, the TAs, and the staff. And I know I speak for all members of the review group when I say that. Now, despite that, the adoption of IPSASB's by national governments is, however, low. Some would say very low. A number of consultation exercises have been undertaken, including by IFAC, including the Eurostat survey regarding the applicability of IPSASB's, and a common threat in many of those consultation exercises has been that the governance structure of IPSASB's is not appropriate enough for the public sector context, and it's hampering their adoption of IPSASB. I will come to those governance challenges later. But if IPSAS are to play the role that they obviously have the potential to do, there is a great need to resolve this governance issue. It has been around with IPSAS for a long time. The Lickyerman Review, which some of you may be familiar with, essentially proposed that the monitoring group and the PIOB would take over this function. However, last year they declined to do so formally. And as a direct follow-up from that, it was the IMF, the World Bank, and the OECD, together with the Financial Stability Board, IOSCO, and INTOSAI, were asked to form a group to propose alternative strategies for the future governance of IPSASB. And I should note that IFAC itself, as well as Eurostat, are observers. So that's why we came into being. Essentially, when the monitoring group and PIOB declined to take over this responsibility, which many people had thought would be the most appropriate way going forward. Now, if I go through the next part of my presentation, which are the governance challenges facing IPSASBs, and they can be put under three very strongly worded headings: legitimacy, credibility, and accountability. Legitimacy has to do with the membership of IPSASB and how they are selected. Credibility goes to the design of IPSASB's work program, and accountability goes through the very oversight structure of IPSASB, and indeed the fact that it has none at the moment. If we turn to the membership, there has long been this image of IPSASB that it is dominated by private sector accounting firms. I don't think that has ever been the case, that it was dominated by private sector accounting firms. But at the very beginning, I think it is fair to say that they played a much more prominent role in IPSASB than they do now. But the image of IPSASB being dominated by private sector accounting firms hangs over and is a shadow over IPSASB's work. The appointment process is entirely private sector oriented. Members are appointed by IFAC's board on the recommendation of its nominating committee, where, although people may dispute this, where all currently have a private sector orientation. And although this is changing now, nominations have up until now come principally from national accountancy institutes, which mostly have a private sector orientation. So it is very easy to have the official structure feed into the stereotype that many have. Now, although the profile of IPSASB's members has evolved greatly and is today, I think, a very good reflection of the mixture, an appropriate mixture of backgrounds, there is no institutional mechanism to guarantee that this will go forward. The IFAC board could decide to appoint an entirely private sector-oriented board over the next coming years. There is nothing to stop that from happening at the moment. Another another governance challenge is the work program. IPSASB's very reason for existence is to promulgate public sector-specific standards. However, only four original IPSASB standards exist for the public sector. That is revenue from non-exchange transactions, service concession arrangements, and the two others, which some dispute are actually accounting standards, presentation of budget information, and disclosure of information about the general government sector, which is statistics. The remaining 28 accrual basis IPSASB standards are a tweaking, and I know that is a horrible word, of already existing IFRS private sector standards with different illustrations and different wording. And I know standards such as the impairment standard is hardly a tweaking of the private sector one. At the same time, IPSASB devotes great resources to a project on alignment with government finance statistics, on public sector governance, including how senior officials in governments are appointed, not just in accounting, but in general, on long-term fiscal reporting, which is not based on accounting per se, and reporting service performance outcomes and outputs. And many question the emphasis that is placed on those types of activities versus what some would consider pure accounting issues. So there is a very significant gap in what a lot of people, at least among OECD countries, expect from IPSASB to do and what the work program is delivering at the moment. Now, for the first time, IPSASB, was it last year, Stephanie, that it went out for consultation? And I think that the results of those consultations are very much reflected in the last decisions on the work program. But again, There is no oversight of this. It is entirely the board that decides its own work program. It could decide to completely ignore the results of the consultation exercise. There is no one to say, wait a minute. And as I said, there is no oversight board, neither for the nomination of members nor for the manner in which the standards are developed. But I would, however, like to say, having been associated with this board, that it does engage in elaborate due diligence processes as it carries out its work. In fact, you could say that it almost does this to an extreme, perhaps to compensate for the lack of other accountability mechanisms. Now, if that's sort of a very short overview of some of the challenges in the area of governance that was identified by the review group, if I now go to the second part of the presentations, which are the options for establishing IPSASB's monitoring and oversight bodies. And there are three options that are presented in the consultation paper. One was to, I think the formal wording is to invite the IFRS monitoring board and trustees to consider increasing the scope of their activities to encompass the activities of IPSASB. The second is to create a separate monitoring and oversight body for IPSASB within IFAC, which would essentially be creating a public sector PIOB. And the third one is to reestablish the IPSASB outside IFAC with its own monitoring and oversight bodies. Now, for each of these options, we presented advantages and disadvantages for each of them. And we essentially took three very practical considerations into considerations when we were discussing the pros and cons of each of the options. The first is the speed with which the new governance arrangements can be put into place, the likely costs associated with different oversight options, and the availability of funding to meet those costs. So very, very practical orientation. Now, the advantages, as described in the paper, of extending the IFRS Foundation's monitoring board and trustees' activities are, first of all, it is integrating IPSASB into the IFRS Foundation oversight framework, which would support the long-term convergence of financial reporting standards between the private sector and the public sector, which I think is a long-term goal that is shared by the IFRS and IPSASB and IFAC, as witnessed by a memorandum of understanding that was signed with that as a goal. The IFRS foundations have well-established competencies, resources, and procedures in place for public interest oversight of accounting and financial reporting standards setting activities for the private sector, most of which will be readily applicable to the setting of public sector accounting standards. And we say, lastly, which is disputed in the IFRS staff paper, that the cost of the IPSASB's oversight would only be incremental to those already in place. But the challenges, of course, is that the composition of the monitoring board and the trustees would need to be expanded to include representatives of a wider public interest and individuals with competence in public sector accounting issues. The additional costs associated with activities of the public sector subcommittee, or however it would work, of the monitoring board and the trustees would need to be met, for which no immediate source of funding is available. And these changes, which may also be a very, very, if not the greatest challenge, the changes would to the remit and composition of the board and trustees would likely have to await a review of IRFS Foundation's constitutions, which, as we understand, is not foreseen for another 2 years. Now, creating what I call the public sector PIOB, that is a separate monitoring and oversight body for IPSASB within IFAC, the advantages are that the members of such a body or bodies could be selected fully on the basis of their background and expertise in public sector accounting issues. Such a body or bodies could be established reasonably quickly, as this would not go through the constitutional and organizational changes that we understand would be necessary with the IFRS option. And it is expected being the key word, that the current funding of the activities of the IPSASBs, half of which are currently made by IFAC and its member bodies, would continue. I should note that half the funding comes from IFAC, a quarter comes from Canada, the Government of Canada, which hosts the IPSASB in Toronto, and the other remaining quarter comes from a variety of sources. The challenges for that model is that it would not benefit from the accumulated experience and expertise in public interest oversight established by the IFRS Foundation's Monitoring Board and Trustees. The overall cost of oversight would likely be increased, as it would not benefit from the economies of scale and scope that would come from having single bodies overseeing both standard setters. And continued reliance on IFAC for the bulk of IPSASB funding could raise questions in some quarters about the board's independence from the accounting profession, which, as was mentioned, which I mentioned the earliest, is one of the key issues that some people have. Now, the third option, which is to essentially re-establish IPSASB outside of IFAC with its own monitoring and oversight bodies, the advantages is that this is most similar, in fact, it is exactly the same as option two, with the exception that IPSASB's formal connection with IFAC would be broken. And again, the principal practical advantage of this option is that any perceived conflict of interest associated with IFAC's financial support to the IPSASB would be removed. However, the challenges is that establishing a new structure will likely be a more time-consuming option than either option one or two, as there is no international organization which has offered to host such a body to host IPSASB or the respective oversight bodies. A freestanding IPSASB would likely require additional staffing and financial resources beyond what would be required under option one and two. And if the IPSASB were to lose the financial support provided by IFAC members, and that is half of the funding, there are no evident alternative means of financing the bulk of its activities at present. Now, to conclude, we very much seek in the consultation document the views on these three options, including combinations or sequenced implementations. For example, the IFRS Foundation being a long-term goal, whereas either option two or three are more short-term goals. There is also, which I did not get into, a section in the paper about the remit and composition of the monitoring and oversight bodies. And the paper suggests the possibility, at least as an interim measure, to have a joint monitoring and oversight body, which I think we would be especially keen to hear from your views on that, even as an interim measure. And the deadline for submission is the end of April, and there is the address, it's ipsasb@oecd.org. We launched this on the OECD website in late January, and it has been downloaded over 1,000 times, the report, which is setting records for reports in this area at the OECD, so there is great interest in this. So again, thank you very much for your kind attention.
Thank you, Jan. Before we move to David, any questions on the presentation or the paper without already getting into the discussion? Any questions? No? Okay. David?
Thank you, Christoph, and thank you, Jan. Just to round off the background, I mean, Jan has given an excellent presentation from the IPSASB review group's point of view. In the paper, we also set out a couple of contextual issues. One, in paragraph 16 on page 5, are the developments in the EU, which we think are relevant, and the proposal that they should move to EPSAS, European Public Sector Accounting Standards. although using IPSAS as a starting point. We're still trying to work out what the potential implications of that might be. The second, in paragraph 17, I've set out for you the previous, what were called constitution reviews of the foundation, where they've looked at the possible extension of scope to take on responsibility for the public sector. And the last of these was the 2012 strategy review, where, in effect, we agreed to defer further consideration until the next review, which, as Michelle explained to you this morning, is not scheduled to start until 2015. In paragraph 19, I've set out what's the current relationship between the ISB and IPSASB in particular through the IFAC MOU is, and the liaison arrangements that already take place. Now, from paragraph 21 of the paper on page 7, needless to say, we focused our attention in the staff paper on the implications of the first of the options that Jon has outlined in the paper, namely extending the scope of the remit of the Foundation and the Monitoring Board to encompass IPSASB. Maybe I should declare an interest at this stage. Jon referred to the Lickerman review of what was then the IFAC Public Sector Committee back in 2003-2004. I was actually a staff member on that review, and Ian was a panel member on that review as the outgoing chair of the IFAC Public Sector Committee. So you please have to excuse that some of us come with baggage. In terms of the implications, we've tried to highlight a number of areas where we'd welcome advice from the council. And the first area we looked at is that, looking back at what was said in the strategy review in 2012, to say that we will look at this issue again as part of the next review of the structure and effectiveness of the foundation, has anything changed that would make us want to accelerate consideration of that? Now, as the paper sets out in the staff's view, it hasn't. Our mission remains to develop a single set of high-quality, globally accepted financial reporting standards to serve investors, other participants in the capital markets, and other users of financial information in making informed resource allocation and other economic decisions. I think that's worth repeating. In our view, that situation still remains, and the challenges, as Hans outlined this morning in looking at the work programme, as Michelle outlined in the update on trustee activities, still remain. So in terms of our current mission, there's still a fair amount of work to do. The consultation document does also emphasise the need for improvements to be made in public sector financial reporting in the wake of the financial crisis. I don't think it was just the wake of the financial crisis, I think even before then. So there is an imperative for improvements to be made there, I think we'd fully acknowledge. But that situation has been around for some time, as has the whole issue of where does the IPSASB governance sit, which, as I say, if you look back to the Lickerman Review 10 years ago, still remains unresolved. So my first question to council members, if anyone has comments, is what views do you have on the impact expanding the organisation's remit, as implied by option one, would have on our foundation's ability to achieve its current mission, never mind taking on something else? And if anyone has views or comments, I'll just stop there and pause and see if anyone wants to say anything.
Charles.
Thank you. David, when I read the actual mission, and I'm sort of reading the words, should serve investors, other participants in the world's capital markets and other users of financial information in making informed resource allocation and other economic decisions, it strikes me that in the capital markets, by far the biggest asset or quantum of securities issued are bonds. They dwarf equities. And within the bond markets, government bonds dwarf corporate bonds. And it's acknowledged that public sector reporting is not of the same quality as private sector reporting. And therefore, it leads me to conclude that there's a possibility, in fact, I think an inevitability, that investors are making decisions about bonds based on deficient information, And given that bonds are usually referred to as the risk-free asset, off which all other assets are priced, it potentially leads to a significant misallocation of resources. And when you have a misallocation of resources, particularly if that misallocation is protracted over a long period of time, eventually you have to pay the piper. So in terms of the current mission, I actually did not see any contradiction in terms of incorporating public sector accounting, because I see it as quite consistent. I think the implication, however, and this has been the, I think, the main feedback that, or the main rebuttal that this council has received periodically when the issue has arisen from the board, and that is the scarcity of resources and therefore prioritisation, and I think that is an inescapable reality. But in terms of the question, has anything changed in terms of the mission? You could argue nothing has changed, but I would argue that the mission has been interpreted too narrowly.
Stephanie.
Thank you. Speaking on behalf of IFAC, who does have responsibility at this point or within which the IPSASB does sit, two comments I would like to make. First off, that IFAC definitely strongly supports the need for oversight of the IPSASB and has been working to get that in place for years. So very, very supportive and very grateful for to the review group for doing this. And I would like to also say that the IFAC board will be discussing this paper itself at the end of this week. So the views that I'm putting forward are IFAC staff views. They will be discussing this further on Thursday and Friday at their board meeting. I think what they would say overall is that that the ISB is a body for private sector financial reporting and that we would be concerned at this point in time if any changes resulted in a change to this board and the changes that would be necessary to the advisory council, to the trustees' composition, and so on. I think it goes back to Charles' second point there about the practicality of this. I think it would reduce this board, the ISB's ability to respond rapidly with complete focus to their own stakeholders, who at this point are primarily for the private sector. And so given all of those structures and the changes that would have to happen across the board and enhancing the skills in public sector in all of the related bodies, and given that things are functioning well at this point for the private sector reporting, IFAC's position would be that it would be difficult in the short run, certainly, particularly since they feel that the need for oversight of the IPSASB is urgent, and so the changes that would have to happen are too long, and that there is a more urgent need for oversight at this point in time.
Lothar.
Just a question where I guess I don't quite understand the reason. I mean, what Charles said, I think, is extremely clear and logical. And then there's a question of resources. Do I understand this correctly? If the first option was chosen, then the funds which are now available would dry up? Or is that so? And why would it be so?
We don't know, I think, is the answer to that one. At the moment, as Jan said, half the funding comes from IFAC member bodies. A quarter comes from the Government of Canada, which has been very generous in giving IPSASB office space in Toronto, you know, staff secondments, and so on. So we're not quite sure what the implications would be for the current funding going forward, whether those sources would stay on board or not.
Also, the total funding only adds up to $2.3 million, so it's quite small.
If I could just there has been no communication to the group from IFAC in any way that their continued funding is contingent upon option one, option two, option three, but it is sort of a natural expectation that with option two, with it remaining within IFAC, with a public sector PIOB, the funding would be more likely to continue. But that is very much an assumption that the review group took. There has been no communication, official or otherwise, from IFAC regarding that.
Fumio.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I'd like to raise three comments. Number one, if IFRS Foundation implants option one, which is put in the IPS ASD, under the IFRS Foundation. I mean, I'm afraid that IFRS Foundation activity for the focusing on the private sector's accounting standard might be weakened because of the different category from the current ISB activities. And also, I wonder if the IFRS Foundation have the sufficient finance and human resources. And number two, if we also we need to inspect the situation with the country who plans to introduce the IPAS is also going to introduce the IFRS or not. And number three is about the oversight bodies. In Japan, for example, the Financial Service Agency, or ASBJ, doesn't have the jurisdiction over the public sector accounting standards. These are now currently oversight by the Ministry of the Administration, so different jurisdictions. So even though in Japan we introduced the public sector's the accounting standard based on the IPSAS, that is a different oversight committees. No financial service agency nor ASBJ doesn't have the right to control it. That's my comments. Thank you.
I'd just like to go back to Michelle's presentation this morning, and one of the foundation's strategic objectives is stabilizing its current funding for its current activities. It does seem to me to be highly dangerous expanding those activities, taking on a body that doesn't actually itself come with long-term stable funding either at the moment, until that the private sector activity is on a stable footing from a funding point of view.
Thank you for that, John.
Anita.
Well, I think that Charles made some really good points about the way that governments access the capital markets are not markedly different than the way that the private sector accesses the capital markets. So arguably, the standard setting, you know, could be under one oversight body. But I think for all the reasons that everybody else has commented on and that the staff did a good job of outlining in their paper, I think that the operational challenges now are too great, but I wouldn't have a problem with taking a longer-term view and looking at something that is akin to option one as perhaps an aspirational goal in the future. But again, coming back to Michelle's comments about funding, I don't think that there's any way to get there right now. I also would say that you might even think about it in slightly different terms to have a common monitoring board. Obviously, that monitoring board would have to be expanded to get the right composition, but perhaps there would still be two trustees over the standard-setting bodies themselves. I mean, that's perhaps a detail that we could talk about at another time, but agreed with the staff completely that the operational issues right now, despite the fact that I might like it from an aspirational point, I think the operational issues are just too significant now.
Having put the operational and the funding issues on the table, I just wonder if one thinks laterally if there isn't an opportunity to use this to move in the direction that Michelle indicated with the funding aspirations, which is to move from private sector to public funding. Now, obviously, that would depend on the goodwill of governments or government-related agencies that may have a vested interest in the stability of the financial and economic system, which, as I put it in my summation, I think is at times put at risk because of the poor quality information that we have about the true state of public sector finances. So just put that on that thought on the table.
Anne.
I'd just like to focus on a bit of the problem that I see. I agree that we have some organisational issues here in terms of being able to take this on at this particular point in time. But there are some really large, and the public sector and public sector transparency is fundamental to some countries. And I think of some of the really large companies in India, for example, Coal India, Indian Railways, they are the largest, two of the largest companies in the world. They don't have transparency because they don't understand the, or they don't apply well, accounting standards of any sort or form. And I think in some countries whereby the accounting, public sector is a very large proportion of the economy, this is a major issue. And whilst it's not easy to, say, bring it into IFRS and make it a subset or a part of IFRS or take on some additional activity, I think it is urgent that we do look at the public sector because that is where there is some opportunity of massive growth if they can, in fact, apply their resources in a much better fashion, and only they can do that when they know what they've got and how they can apply them.
Bruce.
Thanks. I just thought I'd share the experience I've got from South Africa, where a lot of our very large public sector entities have actually forced themselves into using IFRS because that's the only way they can access the markets. In that they felt that using IFRS, even though these are not profit-orientated entities per se, have forced themselves, well, are using IFRS because they think that's better. So I actually think that if you consider a lot of them are moving to using full IFRS because they don't believe that these necessarily are giving them the right answer. Putting that together, I think this is a great initiative. I think that if we could get to a stage where these are into some way looking at things, I think it would be fantastic. I would put out, though, the caution I would have, and this leads a bit to what Charles was saying, was I think it could create a problem with funding. So who's funding what part of what? Is it the government's funding now private sector standards or public sector? I think that's going to be a challenge. And the second thing I think could be a challenge for the ISB right now is that the board is under a lot of pressure to get things done, to get done what it needs to do in the short term. I think if we try to do this in the short term in terms of pushing things in, I think there could be a lot of criticism from people saying, hang on, let's sort out what's there now before we start taking on another mammoth task like the public sector. So I'd support the view that I think this is definitely something we could look at in the medium term.
Okay, thank you for that, and thanks for the comments. I mean, part of the issue, and I'm moving on to the second issue now in paragraph 25, and stepping into the minefield of the legitimacy and authority for its standards. I mean, as Jan has outlined, IPSASB has done a lot of work to address its due process, its procedures, the way it goes about things. And I think the consultation document actually pays tribute to the IPSASB board for what it has done within the limited framework within which it operates. But of course, if responsibility for private sector accounting standard setting is tricky and raises some issues of sovereignty and legitimacy, the view as it strikes the staff is that you multiply that even more when you come to public sector financial reporting, where in many jurisdictions the responsibility remains the preserve of governments. And as the foundation is a private sector organisation with a public mission, and the way that we've achieved legitimacy for the adoption of IFRSs over the years has been, we can't force anyone to take our standards. It's been a process of people saying, and starting with the European Union, for example, of saying, yes, we will adopt your standards because we think you are a legitimate and credible organisation. And it strikes us that the challenge on the legitimacy side for public sector would be quite significant. And again, welcome any views that council members have. Are we overplaying the problems, or does it really exist?
Marcus?
A question on this one. If you take over the IPSASB, would it mean that the oversight is done by the monitoring board, which mainly consists of securities supervisors? Okay.
At present it is, but the proposal in the consultation document that Jan alluded to, and it's set out in Appendix D of Paper 3 that you had, was to say that if you had an IPSASB monitoring body, securities regulators would be one constituency who would have to be represented on that, but you would have your primary resource providers representing, for example, the interests of Parliament. Those secondary resource providers represented the interest of investors. national monitoring bodies overseeing the work of standard setting and international institutions. So the implication, as we read it so far, is that the extent of the monitoring board in terms of the interests it represents would need to be expanded quite significantly.
Charles. As you can see, it's a topic dear to my heart. I would argue, in terms of question two, that the IFRS Foundation would actually have more credibility and more legitimacy than the current arrangements. Because at the moment, you know, governments typically rely on the GFS framework that the IMF puts out, or some might adopt some of the IPSASBs. But typically we'll use arguments such as, oh, we're different, you know, we don't have the for-profit motive, we undertake certain activities that the private sector doesn't undertake, we have assets, notional assets that are not for sale, and so they use that argument of we're different to justify adopting a different approach. It's possible, I suspect, that if there was the one governing body developing standards and having the resource capability within it to distinguish those areas in which the public sector is different and take those into account, it would actually have more legitimacy than the current arrangement.
Thomas.
Thank you. Two comments on this question. The first one, I think the staff did a very good job on to outline what the problem and what the risk is. I wouldn't call it politicized, probably, but I think it's all about interests. And the question is, who are the people behind these interests? And that's why I think this, if you change the whole setting, this will change the whole IFRS Foundation. It's not only the board. I would think the monitoring board would have at least have two sets of monitoring boards because there are different people sitting there. And I wouldn't underestimate the influence coming from parliaments. This is a crucial thing for parliaments. If you look at local, state-owned companies, it's not just about how you do revenue recognition. Not just, it's not. It's an important issue, I know, but this is not revenue recognition. This is about the public money which is going somewhere. And Charles, I would totally agree. I mean, this is important. The bonds are important, but probably that's something for the capital market regulation, and it's not something for the accountants. And so I think if anything moves into this direction, you would have to shake up the whole foundation. Otherwise, you will not gain this legitimacy which you need, actually, for this. Because I think at the moment you would need much more legitimacy for the Ipsos, if you have it on board, than for the current system.
Begonia.
Thank you. Well, I guess that in an ideal or theoretical world, perhaps we could think of IFRS and IPSASIS, or whatever the name is for the public sector accounting, converge standards. But in the real world, I think this is not so practicable, and the number of pressures that the ISB, the foundation, can suffer from any part in the future, if the tendency is to introduce this additional layer of not producing standards, but supervising or monitoring or whatever it is, it's going to be tremendous. So I really don't see the real advantages of entering into that new area, with the exception of perhaps some public company, some companies that have some bonds in the market. Well, this is true that there are some investors that are affected by the way they produce the standards. But in general, there are much more, there are other uses of the public sector accounting that are far beyond that. So I find a very, very difficult and dangerous arena if the ISB or the IFRS Foundation enters into that new world without having the resources and the whole picture clear about where do they want to go. That's all. Thank you.
Anita.
Just one other quick thing, and it really to the point that you were making a minute ago, David. I think the IPSASB does suffer from a legitimacy issue right now. I'm not necessarily convinced that governance is the salvation for all of those issues, and I think the legitimacy issue is evidenced by the fact that we're not seeing governments around the world flock to these standards, and as the staff rightly pointed out in its paper, the consultation paper doesn't really even address the situation in Europe. So I'm still in my own mind kind of weighing it, fixing this governance issue, I'm not sure is going to be the solution to the real problem.
We spoke to option one. As I know, some country had combined two bodies as a whole, like Australia. As for the challenges, maybe the president, like Charles, can introduce the situation in fist to the Australia, combine the two bodies together. Maybe we can learn something from that.
I was actually chairman of the Public Sector Accounting Standards Board in Australia when it was merged with the Australian Accounting Standards Board. And, I mean, I think overall that's gone pretty well. There's still some complaints, I might say, from the public sector generally that they don't get enough attention out of the organisation. But I suppose the difference is that it's much harder to do these things internationally than it is nationally. So I come from a background where I think the standards actually do fit together. I disagree with your slide, John, saying that the reason for existence of IPSASB is to do public sector specific. No, it wasn't. It was to have a look at where IFRS was suitable and where they weren't, and where they weren't or where there was a gap to then take up public sector specific. So I don't think that was a fair comment. But, you know, a lot of people don't believe what I believe. I think somebody on my right doesn't quite believe about, but this is a legitimate difference of opinion on private sector accounting and public sector accounting. So unless you think they are aligned in some way, then they probably shouldn't be together.
We're going to have some internecine warfare here now within the IFRS Foundation. I agree with Ian that I don't see that the two sorts of standard setting should be all that different. I also, if you look at it objectively, the fact that IPSASB is now private, completely private, should be a pro because, in terms of legitimacy, because the quality of public sector accounting is much worse than private sector accounting. And even now, after the financial crisis and with the aging of societies going on very rapidly, we have most European countries have not capitalized their pension liabilities. If they had, it's just incredible that it hasn't happened yet. If as a private sector company you would do it that way, you would go to jail and that would be the right thing to do. So I think in itself there's a lot to be said to privately organize also the standard setting for governments. Of course, the fact is it's never going to happen because, as Thomas said, this is so much interlinked with politics. And the interests are so huge that politicians are never going to let go of this and will always want to have a firm grip on this. And if you indeed look at the proposed governance for the European standard setting, well, they did a nice job in making it look superficially like our governance, except that it is 100% political. It's going to take place in a complete political rather political setting. Let me be a bit more cautious. And I think it would indeed be, for that very reason, very likely that if it would be drawn into our sphere, which I think would be for many reasons would be the logical thing to do, because the standards do look alike and the principles are all not that different. But I think it would bring so much politics into our organization that that would be very difficult to deal with. And now for a more nuanced story.
I've been very imprudent. I should not have attended this part of the advisory council. And I'm in a rather uncomfortable position because I do not want to preempt in any way the position made by the organization with regard to this consultation. Now, it happens that I've never been a politician, but I have been for 20 years leading budget and accounting departments in France, and I've been involved in public accounting until now, by the way. So I have a view which is a personal view, which is, and I'm not going to comment on it today in too much detail. I will only try to elaborate a little on some of the remarks that have been made. Firstly, why is it that we are looking at this issue? Because of the development of the financial crisis that became a financial crisis of the public sector and quite dramatically. And therefore, people looked into this whereas they had never looked into it before. So we have to look into it. Secondly, I do not share the view that nations or governments or states are comparable to companies. And I think that one of the big difficulties of the issue is that we do not have an internationally shared conceptual approach to the management of a nation. Companies can be different, but globally speaking, they have very similar models. There are differences between listed companies and private companies, cooperative, mutually owned, but nevertheless, they are all similar animals. And the conceptual framework to address these issues is fairly well shared globally. Governments and nations and states are different, and we do not have the reference of a conceptual approach to this that is broadly shared. Obviously, when you look into the public sector, you should make a difference between those entities that are comparable to companies. And in my view, these entities should apply IFRS without any doubt. There is no specificity for a transportation company or a mining company that happens to be publicly owned in the sense of state-owned. And this is not the issue. The issue is how do we deal with states, how do we deal with local authorities, and how do we deal with their model. And the issue of the public finance crisis goes with the notion of how do you manage these entities. Besides war or referendums whereby the people change the system, nations and states do not die. They survive whatever happens. Usually, for most of their activities, they do not match resources and outputs. And they do not identify a profit per se. I don't say that they should not aim at efficiency, social efficiency, national profit, but from a financial point of view, the basic concepts are different. And therefore, the question raised today is, has time come when, because of the crisis, there should be some kind of harmonization of the way governments account for other activities or not? If that is the case, and I personally believe it is the case, then we need an organization to deal with this. And this organization has to have the political legitimacy, which will create the dynamic whereby governments will accept to consider the standards and to implement them. And hence the issue of governance. The issue of governance is a way to address the substantial issue, if the substantial issue can be addressed. And the true question is, will governments answer the question you put to them? It's not hazard if this review group was chaired by international organizations. It's the OECD, it's the IMF, it's the World Bank. If you don't have international organizations that have been established by treaties that are backed by governments, there is no way governments will work together to find common standards. This has been to be led internationally. There is no requirement by the market, if I may say so. The great difference between the IASB story going back to the 70s and the IPSAS board story is that the markets were pushing for international standards for companies. Governments are not pushing for international standards for their activities. Hence the basic issue. And then the divides are of a second degree level. I mean, I have no, I'm not going to step in the options one, option two, option three. We have to talk about it and see how we deal with it. But I am deeply convinced that if we try to move forward towards some kind of harmonization of public sector accounting, and I eliminate this part of the public sector accounting that works like companies. I'm talking of education, defense, social security, and all these things that are basically funded by taxes and that have a kind of management which is very different from the management of a listed company. Then we will have to address very political questions and to make very fundamental decisions whereby we need legitimacy of one sort. And I believe that you cannot take IFRS and say, we are implementing IFRS, because IFRS does not address the issue of social benefits. The most activities in the public sector are based on sovereignty. There are activities that are based on contract, but most of them are based on sovereignty. Most activities in the private sector are based on contract. And this makes a huge difference when you look at budget, the way people decide that they will change the rules, they will diminish the benefits, they will increase the benefits or whatever. How do you deal with this? I mean, there is no... It's a different kind of approach, and this is why you could have one model or the other. In France, we used to have, since 1947, an accounting body called the CNC that dealt with everything. The public sector was the fifth section of the CNC, and I was the chair of this section years ago. Today, we have two bodies. We have the Autorité des Normes Comptables and the CNOCP. it doesn't solve the issues, I would say. We in the case of France, we have full accrual accounting. We implement most international standards with regard to everything that can be applied to a government. Only we have not found the good solution to deal with a number of issues, such as social benefits and transfers, for instance. So this is, I think, the substantial background. There is no divide between us. There is only there is only a question: how do we address these issues? How do we address these
Michel,
issues?
If what it is, of which you say is true, and that every nation is unique and you can't really compare, then you can also not have European public sector accounting standards.
Well, I will tell you why we why Europe
because
why?
because
no,
France and the UK are more different from each other than the UK the USA.
You on that specific, I guess France and UK are closer. This is one issue. Or UK and France are full accrual accounting. They don't have any difficulty with international standards. This is not a political issue. The issue of Europe today is a very practical and operational one. When would an international body deliver a set of standards that is applicable in the EU so that the EU can manage the problems they have today? If we were able to have IFRS for the public sector tomorrow, we wouldn't need to have EPSAS. In a way, the paradox is that Europe struggled to finalize European standards for companies and failed, but there are no international standards for the public sector, and we need to have one soon if we want to deal with the euro.
Yeah, but are these problems...
I start to worry that we get into a session in which the trustees and the board advice to the council rather than the other way around.
I can't avoid it. I didn't choose. I didn't make a comment on the choice.
David.
Sorry about that.
I can't wait until the trustees meeting in April. I'm conscious that time is running against us. I mean, on page 9 of the paper, I'm highlighted some of the funding and operational challenges as we saw it, and I was struck in particular by the comments made, for example, by Begonia, Thomas, and John on the funding side. So I don't know if anyone else has any burning comments on the funding and operational challenges we might face there. If not, I'll leap to the other implications and challenges on page 10. And Marcus, we've already discussed the potential makeup of the monitoring board, where option one to be taken on. And then we go on to say, well, how would this affect the body of trustees? We do have a number of trustees who already have an interest in public sector issues, notably the chairman. And we have Sheila Fraser from Canada, who's a former member of IPSASB and Governor, Auditor General of Canada, for example. But there are implications of thinking, well, how else would we need to expand the trustees, change the balance, have a public sector subcommittee? These are very initial thoughts that we had. And then if we did take it on with the technical challenges as well, if we took over overall responsibility, how would the technical side work together? We can see, or some of us can see, that there are synergies to be had in developing standards, looking at both sectors overall. But again, there would be challenges in terms of operational funding and so on, as we mentioned. So I don't know if any council members have any other comments on any of those aspects. While the chairman's away from the mic. Anne, is that you?
Thank you. I apologise, this is my first meeting and maybe I'm therefore missing something. This seems to me a breathtakingly overwhelming proposition. And if the main job of providing global standards for the world's capital markets were complete or near to completion, then thinking about another inspiring task for the world might be in order. But I think this is daunting, not just technically and in terms of resources and capacity. I used to work at the World Bank, and I remember full well, you know, the debates on conditionality. You know, at that point, talking about public sector accounting, you had the big stick of a loan or the carrot of a technical assistance package. And so I even doubt who the customer is for this. I know the OECD has an interest, Anne was just explaining, around promoting growth, and no doubt better behavior, better reporting would facilitate growth. But I would just say to finish the task as set is such a priority and so important. If you were close to completion there, it would be worth looking at an additional challenge of equal proportions. But otherwise, I would let others tackle this.
I just have fond memories of this, and Bruce raised the same point. I met with David Tweedy for every 6 months from 2000 to 2003 to discuss this issue. And each time he'd say it was a really good idea, but we're just so busy at the moment, we should leave it to the medium to it. And nothing's changed.
Okay, thanks for that, Anne. And finally, I don't know if anyone has any last general comments on the document or the implications of it before we close. John?
Just one observation is that the document seems to have a presumption that you must have two oversight bodies, that you should have a trustee-type body and a monitoring board. Those are constructs that have been developed to resolve the conflict between a private sector standard-setting body needing to demonstrate its independence and also needing to demonstrate that it's operating in the public interest. I question whether something that is setting standards purely for government couldn't operate with just one body, which would seem to me, firstly, that would seem simpler and possibly cheaper, but also it does call into question whether the IFRS Foundation structure is appropriate in the first place.
Philippe.
Actually, I had a question going back to the discussion about our stakeholders and investors, and maybe a remark more than a question, but it seems to me that the market authorities, represented here by ESMA and IOSCO, have a general remit of protecting investors, and not only investors in private sector equity instruments or bonds, but investors at large, and they may have a view about our role with regard to protecting those investors in government bonds. But still, I did not hear much from them.
Mariko.
Let me explain the current monitoring board discussion briefly. So the monitoring board has informal discussion at this stage, and we haven't reached any conclusion, but most of the members think that we should take a long time to discuss this issue because of the organizational issues. Thank you.
Roxana.
Yeah, so I was deliberately silent on this because we haven't really discussed this. When you commented previously on the review which has been done, we said that probably it's something which should be solved. We're all more in favor of the third option, so having a different body, not really mixing it with the ISB, because it might raise some conflicts and it might bring some more political impact on the ISB. But this is, we will have to discuss again. That's why I'm not really presenting a firm view about it. But it's an issue of what we are interested in. Obviously, is the fact that there should be more transparency from those governments which are issuing bonds on the capital markets. And clearly, today they are only in the hands of the credit rating agencies. But even the information which is then used for the rating is not necessarily always accurate and comparable. So clearly, there is an issue, and we'd like very much to see it. But as I think what we are discussing today, of course, there is a need for governance to be put in place first in order to give credibility to those standards. But now mixing that with the ISB, I don't know, it's difficult to say, but we agree that it would be good to have a solution to the problem, not so easy to find a very quick solution to the problem.
If you say we, you mean ESMA, right? Anne?
At the moment at the OECD, we are the committee, the Corporate Governance Committee, is in the process of revising their corporate governance principles, which are, in the end, the only standard for corporate governance in the world. And even non-OECD countries accept it. And we have the same difficulties we're talking about at this table. In other words, we have a different approach for listed companies and non-listed companies and private companies, and then also and the private sector. And they have, and it has been working for years, and it's not working perfectly, but it does work. They have the corporate governance principles, and then as a subset, they have the state-owned enterprise guidelines. Mm. Now, the difference between the state-owned enterprise guidelines and the others tend to be applied largely to those undertaking not just commercial but competitive activities, whether they be state or whether they be private. And then those that deal with the state and enterprise guidelines is the additional tack-on to what then is the greater accountability if you're a state-owned enterprise undertaking these competitive activities. Mm-hmm. The one thing that they haven't dealt with, and governments have dealt with it diversely, is the way in which they govern for their, as you call it, their social activities. And so there's almost three levels to the discussion that we've got. But I understand, I would not like to see the discussion sort of permanently shut down, because I think it might work if there was something to do with funding an organisation, but I don't know that in the current environment for the IFRS Foundation that it's actually a viable situation right now. But I think there is a structure that can work, but it's not an easy one.
Let me maybe try to, because it sounds to me as if there is a lot of consensus, at least from what was expressed. And so tell me if I got that wrong, but it sounds to me that what was expressed is that option one is not feasible, at least in the short term. And that the reasons Charles used the term practicability, and this is about priorities, funding, organizational impact on the one hand, but on the other hand also the political pressure that could accelerate even more if option one was followed. I also heard that some members believe that option one could, although not feasible in the short term, be a long-term aspiration because of all the similarities between public sector accounting and private sector accounting, and both of them have an interest on the investor side. And finally, the question was asked whether governance is really one of them, the only driving factor for the legitimacy issue that IPSEPS is obviously facing. Well, that's why what I grasp as being consensus. Anything to add? Anything to correct? No? Begonia.
Just a comment and a question. I am not so sure that the public sector accounting is so close to the private sector accounting, with the exception of some cases where entities are directly looking for funds in the stock exchange, perhaps. But in general, I would take the other view, that there is a huge difference. And then only for those cases where there is close commonality, I am with Michelle, and I agree that they should just use IFRSs. So I would not support the idea that there should be this convergence between these two types of standards. I mean, I think in my understanding, these are complete different perspectives of the accounting for different purposes.
My wording to say that they of all that what they have in common, that mainly came from what was presented, that currently IFRS appear to be the starting point for public sector accounting, and of what you hear from those countries that have it, that we have countries in which it's obviously not that different. Ian, for instance, in Australia, is very similar, public sector accounting and private sector accounting. So just an observation that there appears to be a close link between them. Otherwise, I don't think the IFSET would use IFRS as a starting point. And you alluded earlier that most of the work they have done, I think you called it tweaking the IFRSs for public sector, rather than starting on a greenfield approach, which may be the more appropriate approach if there was such a huge difference. Close is something that different people have different views on what it means.
Just to add to Christoph's excellent summary, I think there was a consensus that there is a opportunity, if not a need, for the transparency and the quality of public sector accounting to be improved, and the issue is how best to achieve that. I think what we've highlighted in our discussion is that with option one, there are some significant constraints on the foundation. The financial and resource constraints are obvious, but there's also the potential risk of significant political interference, which would very much change the nature of the foundation. But I think, as Anne has pointed out right at the end, this is a topic that we should periodically revisit and not just sweep it under the table because the time is not right, although one has to wonder when the time will ever be right, given that we've had this discussion periodically over probably the last decade.
You got all you wanted?
I'd just like to thank you. It's clearly
Thomas forgot.
To give a fair presentation, I think we shouldn't just forget those comments which have been made that there are some of the advisory council saying that this close link is not the link which probably the majority would think was. And we didn't take a vote here whether that is close or not, but I think we should take it on board.
I'd just like to thank the council for your participation. It's clearly a fascinating subject, and we'll see where the trustees get to in April. So thank you again for your input.